Sego Segoli, and on Ian. Welcome to Compelling Conversations. I am your host, David Moses. It is such a pleasure to welcome to the show January Rogers here to talk about, as you may know, January is both a poet and media production, and she had this amazing series that you may remember that actually took place here at CKRZ. Using a couple of the call letters from CKRZ. In fact, it started with CK, but it went into FU at the end of that. And Indians on the Airway. That was a great hit and a lot of fun. And certainly, I don't know if there's a follow-up to that, but today with January, we're going to be talking to her about a play that's getting a reading of hers. It's had a couple of readings, I guess, and it's going to get another one, or it did have one recently as well.
Yeah.
And it is called Blood Sport. So, Sego, and welcome.
Sego, David, thank you for having me on Compelling Conversations. As a writer, I have to say, the subject of pretend Indianism is having a moment. The conversation is having a moment. And and the way I describe it is like, it's that simmering pot that's now coming to a full boil. And the lid's off, man. And so that's what Bloodsport is about. It's a play that is a satirical look at this experience that we're all kind of like recognizing to be in crisis mode.
Mm.
There's a lot of it. And I believe that that could possibly be as a direct result of opportunities created to be inclusive, to be diverse in hiring policies, and we're seeing this mostly, of course, in educational and arts sectors, but that's not limited to those sectors. So the play Bloodsport is actually a fictitious game show where folks can go through a series of challenges to prove their native identity. And so, actually, it was Yuma Hester, who is a brother, Ojibwe brother, who I have collaborated with in the past and who was on the Indians on the Airwaves project as a camera person, who actually commissioned me to write this play. And it was meant to be a project that we were going to bring to a high school in Kingston. And it kind of ran away on us. Like, it's just like the play poured out of me as a writer. Mm. And then we realized, well, it's kind of got a life of its own. And it really got picked up quickly to gain some dramaturge support. And that, you know, someone who can help in your script development, in your story development. And that was through Red Betty Theater, and they're located in Hamilton, Ontario. So through Red Betty Theater, they have a program called Decolonize Your Ears. And so I got to have this dramaturge support, and my dramaturge is Lucy Cohen. And I just absolutely, I've never worked with a dramaturge before, but I absolutely loved working with Lucy. Mm. You know, it's so exciting, and I got to learn a lot from her notes and her, you know, really expert and experienced suggestions. So this was a new thing for me. And again, coming from a poetry background, you know, I'm a poet. Mm. Like, I think people most know me as a poet. And then moving into this screenwriting with Indians on the Airwaves, that was a big learning curve. But again, very enjoyable. And now this playwriting. And it just seems like this natural course of, you know, moving your writing skills along keeps it really exciting and fun for me. So we'll see how it goes. But you're right. It did receive one play reading recently, October 1st in New York City. So it's off Broadway. But
would like, that put it in Newark? Or
it wasn't that far off, but it was in the West Village. And if you wouldn't mind, I would like to talk about, you know, who was hosting that, because there's a bit of a revival, a new energy that's coming back to Native theater in New York City, and that's being headed by the North American Indigenous Center of New York. And a woman, Melissa Oakes, who is actually from Akwesasne, she splits her time between Akwesasne and New York City. She's kind of like making this revival happen. Mm. And it's very exciting. I got to see other plays by Native playwrights in New York and meet a whole community of Native actors down there. And it was a really valuable experience.
Why do you think this revival is happening down in NYC?
You know, there was at one time, and I don't know if you remember this, David, but there was the American Indian Community House in New York City. And when folks think about Native theater in New York, of course, the first thing that comes to mind is Spider-Woman Theater and Marielle Miguel and her sisters, who really created a presence for Native theater in New York. And the American Indian Community House did kind of take that over for a while. And when I say a while, I'm talking about maybe a decade, more than that. But then that community house kind of fell apart. And that, I'm not the person to tell that story, but that the administration fell apart and a lot of trust was lost there. And again, I'm not going to go into that. But Melissa Oakes is one of the people who broke away from that entity in New York and decided to just start something on her own. And she's the person to do it. Very connected woman, very committed woman, passion for the arts, passion for the Native arts in New York, and again, knows the ins and outs of New York City. So it was wonderful to see this first annual North America or Northeastern Arts, Native Arts Festival happen. And I felt very welcomed, and I trusted the way that they were presenting all the plays there.
Hmm. Well, the first thing that comes to mind for me with New York, of course, is my heritage, because I'm Lenape. So that's what I think about when I hear New York City mentioned,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, cool.
So, but of course, we all know the story about how the Lenape ended up here on Six Nations.
I don't know that story, to be honest.
You don't?
No.
Well, the long story short is they were traveling, you know, as Europeans moved in.
Yeah.
They got pushed further out. A lot went to Oklahoma.
Right.
But some came north and ended up in Ontario. We got Muncie. We got, you know, Moravian Town. Yeah. And more of the Delaware kept going, ended up on Six Nations, retired, wanted a place to stay for the night.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the rest is history.
Okay. All right. Okay.
That's what I heard.
Anyway. I mean, you know, whenever I go to that city, I my feet just love it there.
Hmm.
Like, I could walk all day long in New York City. Mm. And there's just something about it, man. I love to see the old buildings. Mm. And of course, there's a lot of new, you know, architecture around there now. But man, I just love to see those, like, you know, 1908 buildings, those 1878 buildings. And they're just gorgeous. And I just get, like, I drove, okay, this last trip, I drove down from here, which is like a good 8-hour drive. And as soon as I hit the city, and this has happened to me before, where I drive 8 hours, and as soon as I hit the city, I get this surge of energy.
Mm.
And I just, like, cannot stay in my hotel. I get out there, and I just have to see it, you know? So, yeah, there's something. Like, there really is, energetically, there's something there.
Mm. I want to come back to a couple of things that you said about Bloodsport. And you said about being inclusive. And I thought of included. Because of one of the things that you bring into the play, and that is, of course, you talk about professors or people trying to using that heritage as a way to further themselves.
Yeah.
And you also touch on, which is, you know, something I remember hearing about a long time ago, and it's around funding. Mm. And it's about accessing dollars. And if you can say, if you're an organization or a business that say, oh, check this box because you have an Indigenous person working or whatever, you can access dollars, right?
Yeah.
And that helps pay for the bills. And you do a clever job of bringing that in, because I think there's a commercial break.
Right.
And you talk about that. And I thought that was pretty clever the way you brought that into the play.
Yeah, the business of being an Indian, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're kind of focused on there. There is a lot of Well, people build their careers saying that they're Native.
Yeah.
And yet, sometimes we don't see those same people in community.
Mm-hmm.
So you never see some people who claim to be Native in the community unless they're getting paid to be Native in the community. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So what kind of, like, we go there with that. And I think if people are wondering, well, who is this play for? It's for absolutely everybody. Like, I know in the play reading in New York, I couldn't see the audience, but I could almost feel everyone's heads nodding at some of the parts. Like, they get it. They've seen it. They've experienced it. Right. Oh, my God, do they ever understand it?
Yeah.
But then it's also for someone coming in cold who I think is going to be able to walk away to go, oh, my God, I didn't know that this was such a problem.
Right.
I didn't know that this thing was, like, so big that they're writing plays about it now, you know? And yeah, like, you know, David, it takes a lot of energy, a lot of kind of energy that kind of wears you down to make those calls about people.
Sure.
You know, because, you know, if you make the call on someone, you get pushback, a lot of pushback.
Of course you do, yeah.
And so for me, I thought, I don't have time for this. I mean, as a Bear Clan person, I want to be able to protect everything about the culture going forward. We're still in a place where we're reclaiming a lot of things in culture. And please don't interfere with that by having a fake person come in, teach culture that goes into the future as fake culture.
Right, right.
That's what I'm concerned about. Yeah, that's the root of my involvement with this whole conversation, the integrity of the culture.
Mm.
So as a writer, this was a perfect outlet to kind of get my digs in.
You know, it's interesting, and I'm sure probably every Indigenous person has come across this situation. It ties into what you were just saying about the integrity of things.
Yeah.
And that is that if you're the only Native person in a room when you go to a party or you go to somewhere, and it's inevitable that somebody's going to ask you something.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're the expert.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. One who needs to be an expert will stand on that pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
But someone who really knows what's at stake will defer.
That's right.
And say, I don't know.
Right.
And that's the thing that's missing in the conversation about people who think they're Native or they have heard a rumor in their family that they're Native.
Yeah.
They don't say, I don't know enough.
Right. Right.
And so, again, you know, I get to say that in the play, too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's room for a lot of teachings in there and a lot of laughs because it's ridiculous. It's theater of the bizarre. It really is.
Now, the other thing you mentioned just a moment ago, making that awareness or putting people on the spot, I guess, about this, where I was wondering about the audience, if there were people in the audience kind of going, oh, my God, hanging their head and going, geez.
Well, let's hope so. you know, this conversation is uncomfortable, you know, it's uncomfortable for everybody.
Sure.
We don't want to have to pull through the weeds,
so to
speak.
Yeah.
And if this is hitting you in a nerve, what's that about?
And you're right. And that speaks back to that integrity thing you were talking about, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Not only in a community level, I guess, for the benefit and the protection of the culture, but also those individuals that need to be aware and need to step up and say, I don't know, or why are you doing this without having done all the homework and having done and really delved into this?
Exactly. Why are you centering yourself?
Yeah.
Why are you making statements that you have no relationship to?
Yes.
You know, and it within the culture. And so, yeah, we get to the nitty gritty of that in a really playful way. You know, it is, like I said earlier, it's theater of the bizarre because the issue is a bit bizarre, you know, when you think about it. But it's become such an issue now, I believe, because within the occupied territories of Canada, that we do have the ears and the attention and genuine interest from the rest of the population within the nation.
Mm.
And so I think people want to kind of hitch on to that and go, I have the right to say this. I have the right to wear this. I have the right to something that is very, very real. Because the idea of, and let me get into nationalism now, talk about nationalism. Nationalism isn't rooted in very much things that are real. That's why you see things like this Canada flag convoy thing happen, because they're looking for something to latch onto that's real,
right?
You know, and so when it's almost like Black culture in the U.S., where people see, oh, that culture is rooted in real stuff.
Right.
Like that whole hip hop movement was rooted in something very real, real lived experiences. And that's kind of what I think is happening here now. Artists, for example, think that they don't have anything to write songs about. So they kind of hitch on to something that might not belong to them. But they want to be able to kind of join that circle.
Well, that's another topic altogether. We could go down that road.
We're not naming names today.
No. But I'm just saying that's a whole other topic that could be explored and talked about, you know, in terms of where that's going and how that developed and, where it's gone, right? Now, there was something you mentioned earlier I want to come back to, and you said it kind of, this play kind of poured out of you.
Right.
And I was wondering about why do you think that that poured out of you the way it did? Because obviously it was a ripe time.
Right.
But, you know, is that play? What else is in the air?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. That's a great question. You know, I had studied screenwriting at the Banff Center. And that was with one of my mentors, Jordan Wheeler, who was the editor-in-chief for North of 60. And what a great mentor he was. Like, if anybody in our Native community knows about screenwriting, it's that guy. Whose mother was Brunelda Wilder, one of the first Native voices on CBC. Anyways, he comes from this heritage. And I remember, so with that bit of training, and it was a six-week thing, 3 weeks on-site, 3 weeks away, I really took to this form of writing. And then I didn't do anything with it. And when I was much younger, I did write plays for my friends to perform in school, you know, like it was just something that I really enjoyed. And again, I just let it go. And I was pursuing this career as a poet. And then coming back to this script writing with Indians on the Airwaves, again, it's something that's in me artistically that never left.
Right.
It was that bicycle moment, getting back on the bicycle, you know. And then with being commissioned to write the play, too, I had that realization as well. It's like, hey, I know how to do this, man. And I was having a lot of fun with it. And why I think it poured out of me is because, well, you know, I've had that experience where I beak off and, you know, in my attempt to protect things and then protect the integrity of culture. As a person who loves Native music, a person who loves Native art, you know, I go with my gut. I go, hey, what's going on here? Like, if I notice something that feels a little off, I will speak up about it. And so having had that experience and knowing what's at stake, but also how I get those comments get reacted to, was something I could totally draw on. And it's much more healthy to put it in a humorous context than it is to kind of fight and fight and fight, which is, you know, it wears you down.
Right.
So I thought, well, there you go. I don't need to keep harping in that way. I'm going to watch what I do with this now. So it's really taking that lived experience into a creative context.
Let me add this on as an add-on question. Is it you or is it the muse speaking through you?
Excellent question. when I was writing this piece and when I was writing the Indians on the Airwaves comedy series, 10 episode comedy series, the thing that I stay focused on is I reject any kind of cliche. There's a lot of cliche in modern movies that are blockbusters. And I didn't want any of that.
Right.
My focus was to stay unique and fresh and new and put those twists in. And so as a writing method, that's kind of what I focused on. Now, if you're talking about a muse, David, the fact that I'm back here on Six, I mean, I can't not mention E. Pauline Johnson. And this is someone who, you know, I believe, energetically has helped me become a poet in the way that I have become a poet. Mm. She was the first spoken word poetess of her time, but it wasn't called that at the time. And yeah, I mean, she had this lean and love and passion for theater, which is why I think she went into doing theatrical recitations of her poetry. Mm. And so maybe this is her coming back and going, this is a new time, girl. Let's go for it. So it could be that. I'm not saying it is, but it could be that. But the way it came out naturally, it made me feel like I'm onto something, you know? Yeah. Right. Well, we're all onto something. It's not just me. It's a it's a movement.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so I want to go back to Bloodsport again, because we talked about one of the commercial breaks.
Right.
There's another commercial break. Right. That I thought was fairly clever as well. In terms of the two people whose names, when put together, actually create another name that is nicely done. So there's Mel and there's Tori?
Nan?
Mel and Nan.
Mel and Nan Tanning Studio. So that was a real, like, you know, let's really have, like, let's ramp it up. Mel and Nan's tanning studio, where you can book yourself in to get culturally specific tanning tones.
Right.
Everywhere from culturally ambiguous to cops beyond the alert. And so that was really fun. And then the other commercial break, if you will, is a ridiculously named consulting company that will help you get those culturally specific targeted funds.
Yes.
With a made up panel of a committee of retired university faculty and amateur actors who know how to take direction.
And you know what I really like about that is that it goes beyond the whole idea of just the pretendians.
That's right.
We're now moving into the
industry.
The industry side.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, talking about the business of being native. Yeah. It's a whole ecosystem, man.
Yeah.
That, you know, is to blame. So anyway, there was a third commercial too that I might tag on to the end of the play in future times, but anyway, I wanted to let people know when they can see the play, because
absolutely,
it's coming up.
Absolutely, please.
So Friday, November 4th, I'm fortunate enough to, as part of the Decolonize Your Ears program with the Dramaturge Support, they also are offering you, the playwrights, a time to have a stage reading of the play with professional actors and a director and a sound designer and the whole thing. So I'm really looking forward to that. The reading in New York was okay. It was good for a first run, but we didn't have a whole lot of time to rehearse that. So this one I'm really looking forward to, because I think it's really going to smooth out, and then we'll see where we can take it from there. I would love to see this thing full-blown produced, of course.
So November 4th, but where?
At Theater Aquarius.
Ah, okay.
So right in Hamilton.
Yep.
And there's two other playwrights who are having work featured as part of that festival, Decolonize Your Ears, new playwrights festival. And they're not native playwrights, but they're people of color. And I'm really excited to see. I get to meet my actors next week, and we do a table read, and then another meeting, and the director is actually a person, a part Ojibwe young woman who's directing, and so I look forward to meeting her. This is, you know, I'm a newbie, man.
Right.
Like, I'm a newbie coming into this whole, you know, community that has like a lot of traditions built into it.
Mm.
Theater traditions are beautiful. I just love it, but I don't know what they all are, so I'm going to be learning a lot. Well, I do this.
And November 4th is their time. And where do people get tickets? Are they tickets?
Yes. Yeah, you can get tickets online.
Okay.
So if you go to Red Betty Theater, which is the theater company that is hosting, it's like a three-prong thing.
Okay.
There's like Theater Aquarius, and which is the host venue. Mm-hmm. And then Red Betty Theater, which is the theater company sponsoring and hosting the program, the Decolonizer. So I would say go to Red Betty Theater website, mm-hmm. and the tickets are sliding scale from $5 to $15.
Oh, nice.
Like you don't got to break the bank to come and see this, man. You know, you could buy several tickets at that cost. So, and bring the family. Bring your pretend in-ear friends. I mean, you know, just as a little nudge. Do you relate to this? Anyway, yeah, so a lot of people can come. It is a stage reading, but it will be, like, you know, there's direction and, mm-hmm. you know, it'll be fun. Fun to witness.
Great.
Yeah.
At what time?
That's at 7:30.
7:30.
Yeah.
And what day? Is that a Friday, Saturday?
It is a Friday.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, Hamilton's got some good restaurants. Go have a meal.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Have a meal, go see some theater.
Yeah, yeah.
Have a laugh. You're gonna laugh. You're gonna laugh.
Yes.
Like it's funny,
you
actually.
Are, for sure. Now one of the lines, or actually it's just two words that really jumped out at me in another part of this, and you'll have to refresh my memory about where I heard this because I can't remember. Cognitive chaos.
Oh yeah, okay. There's a really nice moment after all the bizarro things happen and the dust settles a little bit in the play. We come into a moment where one of the characters who is actually coming back to their identity gets to go through this kind of memory regression experience.
Mm.
And the cognitive chaos context has to do with a realization, a memory that comes back to them in a burst, helps them remember that they've actually been removed from community.
Right.
And that if you've had that memory and it's been deeply, deeply buried for many, many years, then having something like that come back to you is going to produce cognitive chaos because you don't even know who you are anymore.
Right.
You know,
right.
You don't even know. Like everything that you've believed yourself to be is now upended.
Right. It's like your life's been a lie.
Oh, my God. Right. Yeah. And people that, well, Tom Wilson, for example, you know, his story about realizing his mother's not his mother, his auntie is his mother.
That's right.
You know,
so
this is kind of, we touch on that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, when that happens, it's like you have to start from scratch.
Yeah.
Cognitively, your whole, you know, your whole energy, your whole mentality, your whole intellect, you have to start from scratch. And my heart goes out to people who, you know, who have to experience that because it's, my God, like talk about jarring, you know? So we get there. That's how in playwright kind of a device, playwriting device, that's how I get one of the characters to come back into their own.
Can't help but think about this, how much there is of January Rogers' experience in this.
That's another great question. I have come back home in 2019, in the summer of 2019, after living on the West Coast for 25 years. And that was a great experience. That's where I learned to be a writer out West. And the fact that, and I don't know if you knew this, David, but I was born out West. I was born in Vancouver. And Pauline Johnson died in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, I think that my life, it was meant that I was to become a writer out West. Like that's just where it was going to happen for me.
Mm.
And then
not a bad place,
not a bad place at all. You know, like tons of great writers to learn from out there.
Mm.
And, coming back home, there was something that every time I was doing art projects, I wanted them to be based here as an excuse to come back home. So I did my best to represent myself as a Haudenosaunee person out West.
Mm.
I can't help but vibrate like a Haudenosaunee person.
Mm.
It's there. I want to swear. I like, you know, it's just there. That's how I operate. That's my MO, man.
Mm.
And, but that's not how Coast Salish people vibrate,
right.
You know,
right.
Like they're gentler people.
Yeah.
Just as strong, mind you, but vibrate
right.
more gently.
Right. I like that term,
right?
Vibrate.
It's yeah, great, how, great. It's how people vibrate. It's about our energy.
Yeah.
And so anyways, every time I got to do an art project, I made it happen here because I really was missing home and missing my people.
Right.
And so when I did get when it did happen where I was ready to leave the West Coast, I knew I was going to come back home.
Mm.
And so how does that work with this story? I know that even though I'm able to live in community and exist in community, I'm not coming empty-handed, man. I'm still the new kid. I'm the new kid. And I freaking don't forget that for one second.
Right.
And in that understanding, I bring the gifts. I bring all the gifts and I bring them here freely to share, like really freely. And I hope that what I do and what I bring back home, the people here will be proud of. That's really my truth, you know? So in that sense, it's like, I feel very, 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 very fortunate that in pockets of this community, I'm very, very welcome back.
Right.
If not, that's fine. Yeah. I'm good to prove myself.
Right.
I'm good to prove myself because I'm not doing anything untoward here.
Yeah.
It's all about bringing the goodness, bringing the goodness back home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Appreciate you sharing that.
Sure.
Where do you hope this play can go?
Yeah, I think if it's given all the love and nurturing that it needs, it will find its way onto stages in Toronto. And maybe, you know, this issue is also cropping up in the U.S. Well, it exists in the U.S. And so, you know, when I like to keep it on the turtle. In Europe, I don't know if they could understand the nuances of this subject matter, you know. But I want to see it get into... you know, the mainstream theater stages. Yeah, why not?
Right. Yeah. Okay. That was another question, though. You said they're starting to understand this and be aware of it in the States, and yet this is where you had your first reading, which is interesting.
I know, isn't that funny? Well, and that was interesting because after that stage reading, I had people come up to me, you know, from the audience to go, have you heard of this person? And is it like in a whisper, you know, did you know about this person? And so, you know, there's still those whispered conversations about, you know, with names of folks who are embedded into, you know, influential cultural positions.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. These people hold positions of influence.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
Okay, January, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show and talk about Bloodsport. As people mentioned, you can see this on November 4th. Yeah. And if you go to the Red Betty Theater, that's where you can probably get tickets.
Yes.
It's in association with Theater Aquarius. It starts at 7:30 p.m. It is January's play, Bloodsport, along with two other
playwrights
of color that are presenting their readings as well.
I don't know if their plays are being I think their plays are being presented on the 5th and the 6th.
Okay.
So the new Playwrights Festival lasts for 3 days, and mine is first up on the 4th. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So if you want a chance to see this reading with production.
Yes. Well, stage reading,
with production.
Yeah.
Then you can do so. Again, November 4th is when it is, 7:30 p.m. at the Red Betty Theater. You can go to Theater Aquarius or Red Betty Theater to find out about getting tickets for supporting January Rogers' play, Bloodsport. And it's been a real pleasure having January here on the show. And she is, of course, a Mohawk Tuscarora and the Bear Clan, and as she mentioned. But she's also, as you may know, she is the proprietor of Ogista Publishing.
That is correct.
Which, how long has that been in around now?
Since I got home.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things I brought back home, was Ogista Publishing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there you support other writers.
Yes. The whole crux of initiating Ogista Publishing is to support Six Nations writers.
Mm.
So just writers within the Six Nations community. And we have one book that's out by a Six Nations author, Dawn Cheryl Hill, who is here, her book, Memory Keeper.
Mm-hmm.
Short memoirs about growing up as a child of a residential school survivor. Great short memoir stories, really well written. It's going into its third printing.
Nice.
And it got longlisted for Native Community Reads.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we
did something really great there. And I just love working with Dawn Cheryl Hill. She's got great hustle with her book. And she reads her story so well. I'm not sure what the next book will be, but I am kind of out there looking for the next great story to come through Ogista Publishing. And, you know, just to mention too, David, I'm currently the writer in residence at Western U.
Yes, you are.
And that's fun. Like, I'm having fun with that. one day a week. I have office hours down in London, Ontario. I make that hour and a half drive into Oneida territory. And I get to, it's a lot of reading and, you know, just staying very active and employed, which is important. So it's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Western, London, Ontario.
Yeah, man.
So I have to tell you this quick story. When
tell
you
me.
Said London, it triggered a memory.
Oh, good.
And the memory is this. My song, The Monkey Dog.
Yes.
Well, I had someone come up to me at one point and say, you know, that song plays 13 times between here and London.
Wow.
And I went, how would he must have played it over and over traveling between Six Nations and London, Ontario. And I timed it out. It's 5 minutes. It's 5 minutes long. Right?
How many times does it play?
He said 13.
13.
So wherever he was going, but he said London.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I kind of went, wow, that's
funny.
Pretty, it is
that's
funny.
I've heard someone describe they said, oh, my future wife lived two songs away from me. You know what I mean? Like people who, that's an interesting way to measure time. I like
that.
Well,
it depends on what song it was.
I guess so. Stairway to Heaven, 14 minutes.
That's right. There you go. Now, the other thing, Indians on the Airwaves.
Yes.
What's happening with that?
Right. So it is this on YouTube. So if you haven't gone to the YouTubes to find Indians on the Airwaves, and if you want to binge a really hilarious 10-episode web series that was shot here at CKRZ, the station, do so now and subscribe to the channel. We've got the series on a playlist, so you can just like hit play, sit back, enjoy. I am in conversations with APTN. With their Lumi acquisitions person. And so they've seen the episode because originally before the series was produced, I had pitched it to them.
Yes.
And they passed on it.
Mm.
But luckily, Canada Council for the Arts did not pass on it. And they provided the money so that we could get the series produced and edited. And trust me, all of that money was used. Like it was, the whole gamut. So, but it was recommended to me that I just go back to them. And I thought, well, who am I? I'm just, you know, this baby in the woods here to see how they would like the series. So they had a look. And I was in conversation with their broadcast acquisitions person. And she said, yeah, I think we want to do season two. She goes, there's a possibility of doing season two on the broadcast and the first season to be picked up by Lumi. But by the second conversation, she said, no, all of it's going to go with Lumi.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, that's fine. So anyways, we're just still in conversation about that and we'll see where it goes. A lot of people would love to see a season two.
Right.
And if APTN passes on that, then, you know, there's lots of other ways we can make that happen.
Yeah.
There's TELUS, there's Bell.
Right.
You know, there's ISO, Indigenous Screen Office. There's a lot of ways we can make that happen.
Well, congratulations and all the best with that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
All right. So once again, my guest here on Compelling Conversations today has been January Rogers. We've been talking to her about a number of things, but we started talking about Bloodsport, which you can see coming up on November 4th. And as we mentioned, that's go to the Red Betty Theater online or Theater Aquarius. It's happening on November 4th. You can find out tickets there. Starts at 7:30 p.m. Get out there and support January and have yourself a few laughs in doing so.
Shall we, can we say Compelling Conversations the way we said it earlier? Come on, man. It's compelling.
Compelling conversations.
Compelling conversations. Thank you for listening.
Yes, the royal version
the
of
royal. Have a good day.
Yes, enjoy and have a great day. Thanks for listening to Compelling Conversations. Been a pleasure having you all with us. And we look forward to bringing you more right here on CKRZ and Compelling Conversations. Niawagoa, Bama Pea.